The following is a Cartoonerific Studios presentation.
Welcome to Cartoon Fun. It's Cartoonerific. Yeah!
It's Cartoonerific. Cartoonerific. It's Cartoonerific. With your host, Brian Mitchell.
Well, welcome to the Cartoonerific podcast, Classic Animated Cartoons. I'm your buddy and good pal, Brian Mitchell. Thank you for tuning in. Well, on this week's big show, we have part two of our interview with Animation Dynamo. He's a Disney, Warner Brothers, Don Bluth, master animator, Mr. Sandro Clouseau. That's going to be coming up next. Over the last year, people have been asking me, you know, what type of animation do you prefer? And it's kind of a loaded question because, of course, you know, I really prefer hand-drawn animation. I love it. I think it's beautiful when it's done well. But I like all forms of 2D animation. A lot of different things that are being done, and I enjoy it all as long as it's being done well. And even full animation can be botched. You know, just because it's fully animated doesn't mean that it's really good animation. You know, the poses may not be that great and the timing may be off. And, you know, a good scene requires good acting, good poses, how to time those poses out. It's a lot of different things is involved in creating a good piece of character animation. And then to really make that scene of animation sing, you have to find the entertainment value. And what that means is each scene, and scene meaning one shot, should be entertaining from beginning to end. It should be an entertaining piece of animation to watch. And that's the, to me, that's the secret of a good animator. And I think Milt Kahl did that really well. I think Frank Thomas did it very well. Ollie Johnston, all these classic animators. And then there's many animators today that do great, great work. And Burt Klein was on here. He's a fantastic animator. Glenn Keane, of course, is a wonderful animator. John Pomeroy is a brilliant animator. Stuff, it's all visual eye candy. And the gentleman coming up next is a master of all that. And I really enjoy his work. His poses are very clear. The design is excellent. The animation and the pacing of it, the timing of the whole thing is really wonderful. So we should get right to that. Sandro Clouseau, master animator Sandro Clouseau, is coming up next. Don't go away. You'll enjoy it.
The Cartoonerific podcast is now available on Spotify, Google, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, Alexa, TuneIn, Podcast Addict, Player FM, Apple Podcasts, and many, many others. If you like what you hear, please subscribe. A new Cartoonerific podcast is uploaded every Friday. And now it's time for our special Cartoonerific guest.
Without further ado, here now is part two of our interview with Sandro Clouseau. Enjoy.
Wow. And they offered me a job. The first job was on Fantasia 2000.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
On the Firebird. You know the Firebird?
Yeah, that was John Pomeroy's baby.
Yeah, he was there. He was. He did the lava. Yeah. Yeah. So I was on the team that did the sprite. Mm-hmm. Right? And that was amazing because it was totally the opposite of dance. At dance, we had to trace the stats, right?
Yeah, I hated that.
Yeah, I didn't like that either. And then when I got to the sprite, we had this character that nobody knew how to draw her. Right. Nobody knew how to animate her. And uh-huh. She changed. She's very, she changed forms, and she's very organic, you know?
Yeah.
You had to use your imagination. That's what I wanted.
Sure.
And that was like a big contrast, big the opposite of what I was doing. I was so happy doing that because I was using my imagination. And so I was very happy.
Sure.
To work on that one.
Yeah. It's a wonderful film. And that sequence is really wonderful.
I love it.
Yeah.
Very artistic. You know?
Yeah. So you worked on that sequence. How long did that take to do? Were you on that at the beginning of it, or somewhere down the line, or
at the beginning of animation? Yeah.
Okay.
The beginning of the animation production, I think, because when I got there, they had only a couple of shots done.
Right, probably test stuff, right?
No, in fact, I'll tell you something. When I started, the week I started, they didn't have a supervising animator for the sprite yet. They were waiting for the animator, my friend Tony De Rosa, who was finishing Hercules. He did Zeus
mm-hmm.
on Hercules.
Yeah.
And he was an amazing animator. And they were waiting for him to come over to do the sprite. Mm-hmm. So after 1 week I was there, he came over and I talked to him. And even him didn't know how to do the sprite, how to animate her.
Right.
Because he just started. He didn't do any tests. You know? Mm-hmm. So he did the first shot, like a close-up, to test the character. But then everybody was animating, and I remember doing my first shot. It didn't go very well with the directors because they didn't see the sprite that they wanted, that they created in mm-hmm. my animation.
Right.
And Tony was with me. Tony was defending me. He said, no, but we are just starting. Let's see what I can do. And we went over. He came over with some drawings for me, And I was like, we're like learning together
mm-hmm.
the character.
Right.
And my second pass I did, they loved it. Right. And after that test, all the shots I did, it was like approved. Only the first shot didn't go well because nobody knew how to do her.
Right. Well, you're trying to figure it out. You know, that's the problem when you start work on a film, because somebody has something in their head, and sometimes you can get it out through a drawing, and sometimes you can't. And it's subjective,
Exactly.
Because I can tell you, just going back on one scene that I did, nobody knew. Nobody really had an idea what they wanted, but they knew, well, that doesn't work, and that doesn't work, and that. And then you have top people working on it, but it's like, you're trying to get into the head of the director of this thing.
Exactly.
And sometimes the director doesn't even know.
That was the case because even the director couldn't tell us what they wanted to see on that scene, in the shot.
Yeah.
They couldn't explain to us. They just said, I remember they just said, oh, this is not the sprite.
Right.
Okay. What does it mean? It doesn't mean anything. It's not the sprite, but mm-hmm. It's supposed to be what, They couldn't tell us.
Yeah.
So what we just discovered by doing drawings and working together, me and Tony,
Yeah.
And then little by little, we start to understand what they wanted because these things were getting approved. And they would love it. When they loved it, They say, oh, yes, this is it. Amazing. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew we were working.
You're going in the right direction.
But it took a couple of weeks too.
Yeah.
I was a little scared because it was my first time at Disney, right?
Right.
My first shot at show and they didn't like it. It's like, no, it's not the sprite. Okay. And I was like, oh my God, maybe I'll be fired. I don't know. I was kind of scared.
Yeah. There's always that moment where you're not sure if things are going to work out because, plus you have to get into their mindset too. You're coming from a different place where they're, they're basically doing a live action film and animation, tracing it all. And now, you need to know where you can go with some of this stuff and you don't know.
Especially a character like that. We didn't even have a model sheet.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
It's not like you have a model sheet. When you work in a film more traditional, you have the character already established.
Sure.
Front view, back view, whatever view you need.
Yeah, at least.
That one, we only had the drawings from the storyboards and the drawings by the directors done, but with the color pencil and nothing like animation. The animation character was started by Tony De Rosa, the supervising animator, who came 1 week after me. Before that, we didn't know how to draw. We didn't have anything. It was just like it could be anything.
Yeah, a little bit too loose.
Yeah, too loose.
Should have had that all figured out.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Every drawing they would do was different, would look different, you know?
Yeah. You know, I always wondered how, like, they stylized some of these films, like even Robin Hood, you know? Mm-hmm. And normally they would have Milt taking Ken Anderson stuff and doing some test animation and then building the model sheets off of what Milt did. And even then it wasn't finalized. Because I know Anita from 101 Dalmatians, they started animation on Anita and she changed design somewhere into the production. You know, she didn't have the pointy nose that she had later on. She had, you know, it was more subtle. And so, you know, I never understood. I mean, those films come together quite nicely, but it was kind of like, you know, it was all up in the air from the storyboards, you know. So pretty interesting. So after those initial tests, things started to gel. Were they making model sheets from your drawings or from Tony's drawings?
From Tony's drawings, yeah. Then started getting model sheets. And no, the first test he did, it was like establishing character.
Yeah.
How it moves, you know, how the character moves, and it was a very important test.
Right.
It actually became not a test. It's like it's the first shot that she appears, a close-up.
Right.
It's the close-up of her, and then the hair parts away, and you see her face.
Right.
That was the first test he did.
Wow.
That established the character. From that moment on, all the animators knew what to do.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, there's enough drawings there to make a sheet out of. Yeah. So, how long did that last? The production of that
for me it took like I think I was on that for 8 to 9 months.
Yeah, and do you know how long that is? I mean, it's not tremendously long. What is it? 10 minutes maybe or
50? No. It's almost, I don't know how many minutes, but how long? But it's short. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe so, 7 minutes. I don't know.
Right. So you were animating there, and then. What happened after that when that wrapped up? Were you working on more Fantasia 2000 or were you assigned somewhere else?
Besides that, I think that's why I stayed for 9 months. Besides that, I did some I just helped out with some animation for the Tin Soldier sequence.
Okay.
They had some rats in the sewer and the rats were hand drawn because all the rats is CG.
Mm-hmm.
But CG with some hand drawn. Okay, it's a mixture of the, and the rats were hand drawn. So I did some rats in the sewer.
Right,
that was kind of fun too. I always forget about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that too. And then what they had at Disney at the time, maybe they still have, I don't know. They used to call open house where they would show the directors and producers would show their next movie to attract people to work on for the film.
Right.
So they would have like maybe two or three projects and they would have a open space with the boards, with the you know, conceptual drawings for all the productions that they were developing to attract people. So you'd go there to the open house, say, oh, I love this project. I want to work there. Then you could talk to the producer, to the director and show interest in the project.
Right.
So I think we had one of those in Kingdom in the Sun was one of them, which became The Emperor's New Groove.
Right.
It was used to call Kingdom
of the Sun. Yeah.
Walk the Sun, then In the Sun. It changed all the time.
So Roger.
It was Kingdom of the Sun.
Yeah. Roger Allers was on that.
Yes. Yeah, so Roger was the director.
Yes.
And that's the one I liked it because I remember they were also. They were going to start Atlantis, and John Pomeroy was going to do Milo. I mean, he did Milo.
Yeah,
and I remember him calling me and saying, "Sonny, I'm going to start this character here, Milo." And he showed me some drawings, and he asked me if I would like to work on the team, but I had chosen to work on the Kingdom of the Sun.
Right.
I thought it was more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we had, open houses, so we could, you know, like shop around, you know.
Well, you could gravitate toward one project or the other, and then they know into it, you know.
Yeah, I just loved that one. For some particular reason, it just was more attractive to me. But also, they had the what they call visible training, which was you had to show your work to be hired. So everybody had to put a tape together with your scenes and send to the production.
Right.
So they could decide if they want to hire you, right?
Right.
So even though you're working for Disney, doesn't mean if it felt like every project was independent. So you're not really safe if they don't want you. Even though you're working there, if all the production don't want you, you're going to be laid off, right?
Right. Right.
So you are there working for Disney, but still looking for work. It's like it's funny.
Yeah,
it's not like automatic. They would just put you in another project. I mean, they did that sometimes, but I remember that time you had to go and see what you want to do and send your reel to see if they like what you did.
So you're basically auditioning for the movie.
Totally. Yeah.
Wow. So you got on Emperor's New Groove. Kingdom of the Sun.
Yeah, but I was like a new animator. Nobody knew who I was, so I was giving background characters,
right.
which was great because they let me do whatever I wanted with the characters.
Right.
And they were still developing the movie, the characters, designs, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I did some background scenes, but I treated them like they were A scenes, like important scenes.
Right.
Every character, like there's a scene I remember in the bar, all characters drinking, walking, the waitress, and lots of people.
Right.
I treated each one of them with the different personalities. And I just made if it was a very important scene, and they noticed it, you know?
Right.
And they called me in and said, "Hey, Sandra, we love your scene." There's one scene I did with a background character dancing, mm-hmm. and they loved it so much, they put me to help with the main female character.
Right.
Which was like, they had a supervising animator, but they were not really happy with the way it was going. When right. they saw my scene, they said, "Hey, let's put Sandra to help to do this." So I was like, they were looking at my work, saying, "Hey, this guy, he understands the design of the movie and everything."
Right.
And then they had a designer called Joe Mosier. For me, the top designer in the business,
mm-hmm.
Joe Mosier. He was like the designer of the whole film.
Right.
And because it's very graphic, and they told me, "Sandra, you are one of the animators who understands how to animate this design that's graphic. You know how to. So we want you to help Joe doing model sheets." So mm-hmm. it was amazing because Joe would come up with 1 to 2 drawings for right. a character,
mm-hmm.
and I would take that drawing or 2 drawings, sometimes 1 drawing, and do a turnaround. In play, doing pose, we'll do poses,
right?
Turn around,
mm-hmm.
and it was like a great way of learning design, you know.
With sure,
it was like I would go to Joe, and Joe would go over my drawings and to suggest where things were wrong. So I did lots of model sheets for which was Kingdom of the Sun, of the Sunday Kingdom in the Sun, and yes. then they changed it to Emperor's New Groove.
Right.
And I continued doing model sheets too. And then they gave me I became a lead animator on that because they liked what I did. So they gave me all those small characters to do.
Right. Wow. Very neat.
Yeah. It was very nice. It was I had my own characters that could do, I didn't have to show anybody, just the director. It was like, I was free to do whatever I wanted. And the director, Mark Dindo at the time, because Roger had stepped out because of the product. It wasn't his film anymore.
Yeah, it was heavy. Wasn't it Sting? Sting was involved, wasn't he?
No, he was. He was in the music.
Yeah, but he basically, a lot of that stuff was axed. I don't think a lot of the music was used.
Lots of songs. He was very disappointed at Sting.
Yeah. There's a documentary about that I don't know.
Sweatbox.
The sweatbox, yeah. I somebody posted it online, and I think Disney took it off. I don't know if
they did. Yeah,
yeah,
because it was like showing the problems, right?
Yeah,
production,
right, and showing the frustrations because
frustration,
with Sting, yeah. So very interesting. I like what the movie. I didn't see what it was before. I know Roger Allers was a little bit. I don't know if he was upset by it, or I can't imagine him not being.
No, he was very upset when they changed his movie and handed it to
somebody else to do it. And it was his baby, really.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and he'd been working on that for a long, long time.
I feel sorry for him because, he, like you said, it was his thing, his baby, and he wanted to make that so much. So you really want to make the movie.
Right.
And he can do it, you know.
Right. But I like The Emperor's New Groove. I like what it became, but I don't know what came before that, you know. But the designs of it are very neat. And in some way, they kind of have like, they kind of look like it could have been a Bluth design thing. You know, if we're going back to the early 80s with like Secret right. Anim around that time, Dragon's Lair and stuff like that, because that was very designy, you know.
Well, the designer, Joe Mosher, he's very influenced by Mill Call.
Yeah.
Mill Call and also Tom Morey from who came up with the designs for the
Sleeping Beauty.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's very influenced by those. Chuck Jones, the best of Chuck Jones.
Oh, yeah.
He's very influenced by those. So the design reflects, you know.
All that stuff, yeah. All the, yeah, the cream of the crop there, you know. Yeah.
No, Joe is an amazing designer.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what I like about your work a lot, because there's a lot of Milt Collin there. And, you know.
Milt is my favorite. That's the one I learned so much from watching his animation.
Yeah,
and his drawings. I used, when I was at Disney, I used to copy everything I could on Milt. I have stacks and stacks that I don't know where to put it today.
Yeah,
because it's all Milt scenes, and I'm kind of fascinated by his approach. And for me, he was the top draftsman at the studio.
Yeah,
no doubt, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he set the design and everything. I mean, from the 50s on, you know, that's all, exactly. You know, Peter Pan, all that stuff, Captain Hook, you know, people say, oh, it's Frank Thomas. No, it's Milt Kahl working with Frank Thomas.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's funny thing is that after a while, you start to pick up this style. You know what Milt did. You know what Frank did. You know what Ali did. It's amazing. After a while, you can tell apart these guys, you know.
Oh yeah,
by their work, just by looking at your work, you know.
What I think what's amazing about Milt Kahl was he said he could do anything,
yes, and he could.
So
yes,
he could do the prince, he could do the princess, he could do the funny characters, he could do anything. Yeah, he could do the pathos too. You know, he was basically all around great animator. You know?
Yes.
And I mean, and I love Ward Kimball stuff.
No, no, me too. Yeah. I like all of them. To be honest, it's very hard to just say Milt Kahl was the best one only. No. Frank had amazing acting abilities.
Yes.
His acting choices were incredible.
Yeah.
Ollie Johnston, same. Mark Davis with Cruella, man, it's amazing. Cruella is incredible. The design, Cruella, and the animation. Eric Larson did the dog, Peg, in the Lady in the Tramp. That's my favorite sequence in the movie.
Yeah.
When she's singing in the pound, you know.
Even some of their B animators were really good, like Hal King.
Exactly.
Hal King was great.
Bob Carlson.
Yes. There's one guy that, if you look at John Kaymaker's book, The Nine Old Men, there's a story about, I want to say it's Eric Clayworth.
He was.
Who animated the dogs.
Yeah.
In Aristocats. Frank Thomas took the, I guess he did so well with this. Frank didn't want to be upstaged. And I guess he took the second sequence with the dogs.
That was a shocker for me because I couldn't, you know, I've seen Frank Thomas talking in documentaries. It didn't seem like the kind of guy who would do that, you know.
Yeah,
he seemed like a nice guy, but he did that, and that was like made the guy quit, right?
Yeah,
I think
he did.
So upset he left.
Yeah, yeah. There was, there's competition. He kind of alluded to that with the other anime, but even at Disney, because I think there's an old Disney TV show, and it's called The Illusion of Life. When they came out with that book.
Right. Yes,
and they had all these animators, with the exception of John Lounsbury, who had passed away, and maybe Les Clark. They didn't have on, but they had on pretty much everybody else, including Ward Kimball. But Mark Davis was on there. He's talking, and he said the genius of Walt Disney was having all these talented artists working together without them killing each other. You know, and it kind of alludes to that.
Right, that's true.
But I think. you know, there's this old story where, you know, Bill Tytla did the animation. He was the animation director on the Mr. Limpet film.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
And it's actually very good. There's some really good animation in there. And Tytla, who had left the studio during the strike in the 40s, he went to New York, and they went back. I guess he was working for Terry Toons and Famous Studios. Right. He ended up wanting to come back to Disney, and I think he took the assignment on Limpet to try to, you know, okay, he's going to direct the animation here, and then he probably figured he could just go right back to Disney, you know, that they would take him open arms. And apparently they were not so pleased to have him back. And I think it goes back to competition. Nobody wanted to lose their star. Everybody kind of had their place there, and they were juggling.
But don't you think also it's because he was part of the strike? Because he was outside on the strike.
I think he went outside in the strike, but I think he was very conflicted, and I don't think he was as vocal as people like Art Babbitt, who was just like, you know, I don't know if he was screaming obscenities or whatever, but he was like, you know, Walt Disney would go by in his car and he would just, you know, make some comment really loud about Walt Disney. And there was one point where Walt Disney was going to get out of his car and like belt him. And it didn't happen. But yeah, I think, you know, I think there were some hard feelings there that he went out because, you know, I think most of the nine old men, they stayed. They stayed.
Right, yes.
Yeah. So maybe it had something to do with loyalty. But I think at that point it was, what, 20 years after the strike? So, you know, 20-some odd years after the strike. So, you know, even Don Bluth was forgiven. Disney wanted to bring him back, you know.
You know, really? Is that true?
Yeah, Roy Disney came to Ireland.
Yeah, I remember when he went to Ireland to talk to
Don. Yeah. And I mean, the story goes that, you know, it's in his book.
It's true. I remember now.
Yeah. Yes. And apparently Roy said, you know, come, you know, you're welcome back. We want you. But I think the key was to eliminate the competition more than to just bring Don back. And so, you know, kill your competition, bring him back, and then, you know, let him go a couple of years later, you know, offer him a sweetheart deal.
I'm glad he didn't take it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, it's
the competition between studios. It's very important, I think.
It's good. I think it's because of that competition that Disney actually got back into the game.
Right. I think so too. You know.
I think with Secret of NIMH, I think they.
Yes, because of him, because of Don.
Yeah, that and American Tale. And
yes.
I think
the special American Tale that made so much money.
It made so much money. And yeah, it was kind of like he's beating us at our own game. We got to do something.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's some pride there, I'll tell you. So what happened after? Okay, so we went from Fantasia 2000 and then now to Emperor's New Groove. Kingdom of the Sun, Emperor's New Groove. So you got to work on these characters. How long was that going on? Was that like a year in production or?
I think it was like even more because I remember we had to stop because of story changes.
Right.
We had to do other things. I remember helping on Tarzan a little bit, doing some gorillas walking.
Wow.
And I think there's another show. Some people were put on the, on Fantasia still for working for Eric Goldberg on that segment.
It's either I want to say the cranes. It's the
not the flamingo, the other one with the Gershwin music.
Oh, the Gershwin, yeah. I don't know the name of the piece, but it's
I forgot now.
John Culhane is caricatured in.
Yeah, he's a character there.
Yeah.
Yeah, some people put on that show because we had to wait for the story change. So animators didn't have any work, so they put everybody in the show on that segment. Mm-hmm. I wasn't involved because I was helping with model sheets with Joe still.
Right.
I was doing model sheets.
Yeah. Model sheets, yeah.
Yeah, so I was working with Joe, so I wasn't asked to work on the segment.
Right.
But yeah, I think it took like maybe, I don't know, I would say 2 years.
Wow.
Total.
Yeah.
Well, no, for Kingdom of the Sun with Roger Allers, I myself animated over 100 feet of animation.
Wow.
That's a lot. And some of the scenes were in color.
Yeah.
And they were all discarded, they couldn't use anything because the story changed completely. Wow. So I lost 100 feet, more than 100 feet. Yeah. Can you imagine other animators who did lots of work?
Yeah.
No, tons of footage were like just discarded. And I remember seeing shots of mine in color, you know?
Yeah.
I think it was like a year working on that.
When you work with Bluth, did you see a lot of stuff? I know in Troll in Central Park, that went through, I know I'm going back again, but there were a lot of changes. There was a scene I animated that they redid three times.
Really?
They said, wow. Yeah, all of a sudden they came, you know, the production manager came in. He said, I need that scene. I said, it's not done yet. He said, don't worry about it. It's out of the picture.
Wow.
And then they pulled it, and then they did it again. They handed me back the scene. It was revised, and I was looking to see if I could use some of it. I could, and then all of a sudden they pulled it again. Oh, wow. And I was like, "What the heck is going on?"
Because
it was with a chimp. There was a chimp in it.
That was like earlier than myself. When I worked on the chimp, they didn't have the chimp anymore.
They didn't have the chimp. It was the troll. It was the
yeah.
And you know, there was a thing where they were using a different voice guy, which was Buddy Hackett, and for the troll.
And then, right.
And then they pulled Buddy Hackett, and they brought in Dom DeLuise. And then they're handing back the scenes because they had to be reanimated.
Yeah, because of the voice change. Yes.
The lip sync. Yeah.
Yeah. That I saw happening, but I didn't remember a lot of change myself.
Right.
I don't remember.
Okay. Yeah, you probably came in after that. So
I think so. Yeah.
Because I was on Rockadoodle, and then I was.
Oh yeah, so I can.
So we were getting like the start. You know, this one section that was in a restaurant.
Okay. Yeah, that was earlier.
Yeah. So. Okay, so where were we? Okay, so Kingdom of the Sun, Emperor's New Groove,
yeah.
And then what?
And then Home on the Range.
Home on the Range.
Yeah,
I really like the styling of that. So who was...
Yeah, who's, the same designer, Joe Mosier.
Wow. So, yeah, and there's...
Again, I was helping him with the mother sheets.
Right. A lot of Milt Collin there.
Oh, yeah. Well, the idea for that movie was like a homage to the 50s, Disney 50s.
Right.
I took things from the King, from Sleeping Beauty, and I just tried to be Milt Collin because it was like an homage to it, you know.
Right, right. There was a film done, I think, around 1960 called The Saga of Windwagon Smith.
Yeah, I remember that.
Which I think was Tom Oreb doing a lot of the designs for it.
Yeah,
yeah. And I love that design period, you know, when they're doing Paul Bunyan, and I think it was done maybe a year or two
Paul
before.
Bunyan, yes.
Yeah.
And then Joe Mosher, the designer, was, again, influenced by all those guys.
Oh, sure.
That's why the style is pretty much.
Well, I love all that.
Martin Provinson. You know Martin Provinson?
Wait, what is it?
Illustrator. Martin Provinson.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you know his work. He was also a Disney artist that left to do books, children books.
Right.
With his wife, Martin and Alice Provinson.
Yes.
Anyway, but he also, John was very influenced by this artist for Home on the Range.
Right.
Yeah. Like even the way he drew, this artist drew animals, Joe would incorporate into the design.
Wow.
The same language, design language.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. What was I going to say about that? I guess, you got the sheriff in there, and the sheriff just, when I saw these scenes with the sheriff, I don't know who animated that. They were just like, I just felt like it was a throwback to like early 60s Disney.
The sheriff was my character. I was the supervising.
Is Mark Hen?
Huh?
Wait, who was that?
You talk about the sheriff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my cat. It was my cat. I did the sheriff.
You did the sheriff. It's yeah, great.
That's why
I didn't know you did that.
Yeah, that's why I want to do a milk call thing. I want to do like a, it's like the king from Sleeping Beauty.
Right. I didn't know you did the sheriff. I didn't know you reanimated the sheriff. That's really sheriff cool. That's really cool.
And also did the goat, the old goat, Jeb.
Yes. Love it.
Yeah, I did that too. Yeah.
Love it. Yeah. Basically, who did the voice of that?
I don't remember, but it was a great voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really remember the name.
Really wonderful. No, the goat was great. The goat was great.
I loved doing. Many people don't like the movie because it was like at the end of 2D animation at Disney.
Yeah.
At the time, they were getting to CG, and many people they hated the movie. Many people are getting laid off because of that. They hated. I don't know.
Right.
I enjoyed. I thought it was maybe not. It's not the best story ever, but.
Right.
It was fun. It was a fun movie to watch.
I thought, you know? I enjoyed the movie. I was working on a CG movie in Newark, New Jersey, and we had a guy there who had worked for Disney Florida. And I said to him, you know, I really love that movie, Home on the Range.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, that thing? I hated it. You know?
See, people don't like it.
Yeah, some people really hate it. But I just loved the design of it. And there's some sequences that I thought were really kind of fun. And the Willies were
backgrounds are beautiful.
Yes, backgrounds are absolutely beautiful. But the animation that Dale Bear did,
the villain,
and then you had these characters, these silly guys called the Willies.
Yeah, the Willies. Yeah.
And there's a gentleman, Sam Levine, who's actually going to be on in a few weeks on the podcast.
Yeah, he was the voice of those characters.
Yeah, he was the voice. So I'm going to try to see if we can coerce him into, like, you know, maybe I'll throw him a donut or something to, to do the voice. So no, I really love the movie. So I love the design. I love some of the goofy animation. Really nice, wonderful work on that. So, you know, you did great stuff on that. I don't know if I said this at the beginning. I probably did, but I'm going to say it again. I really absolutely love your work. Any scene that I've seen you do looks fantastic, and it brings such entertainment to a film.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, we were talking with a woman by the name of Marjorie Stewart a few weeks ago. And she's a design person. She designs homes, you know. Okay. She's not a character designer or whatever. She was never exposed to these films when she grew up, and she's been watching them, and she really loves what she's seeing. And we were watching Peter Pan. Mm-hmm. And she made the comment that, you know, every scene is entertaining by itself. You know,
yes.
She was telling me that, and I said, well, that's really that's what they were trying to do. They're trying to make every scene interesting, or not just interesting, make it fun.
Yeah.
And so there's always something happening in every scene. You just feel like, you know, the animators are really adding something to the story or to the characters every time the scene switches, which I think is a mark of a good animator when they can do that. You know, and I think that's where Milt Kahl came through. I think that's what you do, is you bring something to that scene to make it entertaining. So
that's good to know. Yeah, we always try to plus the scene. Like when you get a scene to do work on, you have the storyboards, and sometimes, let's say something happens here from point A to point B, but what can you do to plus it between these two points? So that's what I try to do. I think we try to do to plus it. Add more business to it, you know.
Right.
This should be more entertaining for whoever's watching, you know.
Right. And I think it makes it more interesting for you too when you're
exactly, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, because anybody can get it from point A to point B, but from getting it from point A and point B and communicating something that relates to the audience is a whole other thing. So,
yeah, for example, just an example of that. I remember there was a shot of a Jeb, the goat. In storyboards, somebody would throw a corn, and he would just eat the corn. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
simple, right? What I did in animation was he would the corner would be thrown, but it would be falling away that would twist, and with his tongue he would take it with his the corner with his tongue,
right,
and toss into the air and eat it. So just adding something extra, more entertaining to it.
Right. Right. It's almost almost like a magic trick.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, or a piece of juggling or something like that that kind of makes it seem more interesting.
And more entertaining. And that's what I think that's what Disney animation is. It's like you're always plusing. One artist plusing the other, you know.
Right.
From all the departments.
Yeah. No, that's what I've always loved about it. When it's done well. And
Yes.
So we go from Emperor's New Groove. We're moving on, and we went to what's
Home
the next
on the Range.
Home on the Range, and then what's after Home on the Range?
Home on the Range got to a point where they said, "Okay, we're not doing any more hand drawn animation here in Burbank."
Mm-hmm.
So we want everybody to we're gonna do Chicken Little, which is CG, and you want everybody to learn CG,
mm-hmm.
and they. Because I was like a supervising animator, they offered me a choice to move to Florida because in Florida, the studio in Florida, they were going to do a movie called My Peoples, which mm-hmm. was going to be hand-drawn animation combined with CG.
Right.
And they offered me, you can go there and do this, do hand-drawn animation. So I said, yeah, I want to do that. So I chose to move to Florida.
Wow.
And I became a supervising animator for two characters, the hand-drawn part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great story, great project. I think I was going to do my best animation with those characters.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know if you know the story. After a year, they closed down the studio and canceled the movie. And everybody was laid off.
Well, I know they were doing Lilo and Stitch in Florida.
No, that was done.
That was done already. So they started
this movie called My Peoples, which was like a story with two families,
mm-hmm.
and they had some one member of the family would make these toys with the recycle, you know, like cans or boxes, whatever.
Right.
And these characters were each one of them were made members of the family that passed away,
mm-hmm.
and those family members came back as ghosts.
The ghosts
were going to be hand drawn, and the whole thing was hand drawn. But these toys were CG. These toys, the ghosts would be come into inside these toys, and these toys would move.
Would
become alive. With their personalities, each one was like a caricature of the family member. Each one of these toys.
Okay, let me see if I'm understanding. So you said it's toys are coming into?
Yeah, no. The ghosts. These toys were made by the family member, and each toy was a caricature of a member of the family that passed.
Right.
Away.
So the ghosts were embodying the toy.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah,
okay.
Like that.
And then, so they come alive.
Exactly.
And so that was CG.
But when they were ghosts before that, they were like hand-drawn animation.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Wow.
So, but anyway, it was a very interesting film, and I was very, very happy. Like two major characters. I helped with the design work and everything. And then they decided to cancel the whole thing.
Wow.
And they decided to close the studio and lay everybody off, the whole studio.
It had a different title. It had a different working title. Wasn't it like A Few Good Ghosts?
No, it was My People. Then at the end, it became A Few Good Ghosts.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was, yeah.
And the scary thing was that we're working. Everything was going well, according to them.
Right.
And then I remember we had a meeting with the director, Barry mm-hmm. Cook, the director.
Yes.
And the producer, and I remember we're in the screening room, everybody, and he was in Burbank talking to us because he went to Burbank for something.
Right.
And he was saying how great things were. We have some like three sequences approved for production.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was going well. Oh, your Sundry animation is amazing, blah, blah, blah. And then the following day, the management went there and we're closing down. Even him didn't know. Wow. Even the director. Wow. Nobody knew they were going to do that.
Wow.
One day you have a great meeting. Everything's great. Sequence approved for production.
Everybody's feeling good.
The following day, everybody in the call back in. So we're going to decide to close the studio. The movie's canceled. And that was it.
Wow.
Yes. It was pretty sad. It was very...
It's sad, well, but it's also... Yeah, I mean, it's shocking because it's like, okay, now what do I do? You're in the middle of nowhere. There's no other animation studio within a thousand miles.
Every studio went there to hire people. Pixar went there. Many studios from LA, people are flying there to have meetings with everybody.
Wow.
I decided not to take any job. I decided to come back to Brazil and... Mm-hmm. Try like to be I was planning to open a studio here, which I did,
right?
And I didn't succeed because I'm not a management kind of guy.
Yeah, you're a creative guy.
It didn't work out.
It's hard because I did the same thing. I left LA and I came back to New York, mm-hmm. and I tried to get something going. And I mean, I was freelancing work, but then there just came a point where I was like, I just need to get a studio going. I need to do my own thing. But I don't want to say I'm not a businessman. It's just that I didn't want to assume that role because then you're not being creative.
Exactly.
Then you got to hire, you know, and it's hard to wear those two hats.
I agree.
Yeah. So, you know, it'd be great if somebody just said, here's some money, just do what you want. And then you can just produce stuff. But that's not the way it works, you know? So it's unfortunate. So you went back to Brazil, but you ended up working on some other stuff after that, right?
Yeah, because what happened was I tried to open the studio, mm-hmm. and I did, and I got some jobs, but it didn't go well. Mm-hmm. And then I became a freelancer, and people would remember me and send me work, and I did tons of work.
Right.
And then I went back. I went back and forth. I went back when they did. Now, Ken Dunk asked me to work there for a little while in Pasadena. He's studying Pasadena.
Who is this, Glenn Keane?
No, Ken Duncan.
Ken Duncan, all right.
Yeah, Ken Duncan. He asked me to work there. Okay. I did for a little while. Then I would go back to Brazil and then do more work for other people.
Right.
And then for Disney called me back to work on...
Princess?
Princess and the Frog.
Yeah.
So I went back... because I thought it was going to be different, you know, mm-hmm. different environment. And it was kind of fun to work on that movie.
Right.
And then after I went to DreamWorks for a year to work on Me and My Shadow, which they canceled too. After like 1 year of work, I think we animated half of the movie. Half was done. Mm-hmm. And they decided to cancel the whole thing.
Do you remember what year that was when that happened?
2013.
Okay. Yeah.
And then after that, what did they do? I came back here and I became just a freelancer.
Right.
And yeah.
But work was starting to pick up then because when was Enchanted done? That was...
Yeah, Enchanted was done in 2006.
2006.
I remember picking up work at James Studio in 2006.
Yeah. Right.
But then I worked just 1 month there. Mm-hmm. And then I came back here to Brazil, and he sent me work from there.
Right.
So I did most of my scenes from here.
Okay.
And I would ship, you know, via FedEx, I would ship everything back.
Yeah. I guess you'd shoot the tests, and then they would view it remotely.
Yeah, I would send, like, quick times to him. He would ask for any corrections, and then I would tie down and send the whole stack of scenes to him via FedEx.
Right. You know? Wow.
And they would do the cleanup over there. That's how I worked. And then that was before digital, of course.
Right.
We didn't do any digital work. Today, we do all digital.
Right. You don't do anything on paper anymore? You stopped doing that?
No.
So everything's on Cintiq, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The movie I'm working on right now with Gandhi is all Cintiq.
Right.
Using Toon Boom Harmony.
Yeah. Well, the tools have gotten better, right? I mean, it's...
Oh, it's easy. It's easy. It, you know, if... The result is the same.
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about shipment, scanning, or, you know, just do the animation. You can play right away, right?
Right.
You can play, or you don't have to shoot it or scan. You just play. And, you know, if it works, you just send a file, the same file you send back to them.
Right.
Via internet, and they get it there.
They have it right away.
Yeah, and it's then, so simple. It's, I mean, there's, I don't see anybody going back to paper anymore.
Right.
After the way things are now.
Some people still prefer to work on paper.
I understand that. Like, you know, I know John Palmer, my friend Lynn Simon. Right. Some people do on paper.
Right.
For me, paper is the best to draw. I'm not. For me, if I had to choose, that would be paper.
Yeah.
But for production today, to be more efficient,
yeah,
I think digital is the way to go, because.
They have it. It's right. You know, they have it in seconds.
About,
you know.
No, think about when you do on paper. It's so great. You can flip. It's beautiful. It's great. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then you have to go and scan drawing by drawing, and it takes time. You know that.
Yeah.
When you do digitally, then you have to send your, if you don't do the final cleanup, you have to send back to the studio, and shipment by FedEx is very expensive.
Very expensive, yeah. Especially if it's a long scene, you know.
And also, when they send you papers, very expensive. I remember Ken Duncan, he for Mary Poppins, we're doing on paper.
Mm-hmm.
I did some shots here in Brazil because I was working there, but then I had to come back.
Right.
And I did a couple shots here.
Mm-hmm.
Kane paid like $1,000 just to ship paper.
Oh, God.
Via FedEx. I mean, it's too much, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So doing digitally, I mean, there's no comparison. You just animate and send the file.
Mary Poppins Returns, when did you start working on that? Because
I think it was 2017.
Yeah.
Or 18, something like that, yeah. I worked at the studio, at Duncan's studio in Pasadena for 6 months or so.
Yeah. Right. Ken's an amazing talent. He's really, he makes it look easy, you know?
Yes.
And he
does like, for him, like the quality is the most important.
Yeah.
Quality for him is like priority, you know?
Right. Right. What'd you work on that? I know you worked on some of the penguins. I know you did that.
Yeah, I did mostly the penguins.
Right. Wow.
And I did a couple of shots with dog. And I did what else? I think one shot with the horse, but mostly the penguins.
Right. Did you do any of that chase scene that they did? That weird chase scene in the middle of the movie?
No, that was, I wasn't into that one. No.
Right. Yeah, there was a lot of good things about that movie. I mean, it's definitely people who worked on it. It was, I guess, for the love of working on this thing again. You know, the Mary Poppins thing. If you grew up on it,
yes,
sure. A lot of people were very happy to work. I know the director was ecstatic. You know, Rob Marshall.
Yeah, Rob Marshall. He went there. I remember we had had meetings with him. He went to talk to every one of us.
Right.
Just to introduce himself, and
he must have liked it. Yeah, I'm sure he loved everything that he was shown, you know?
Yes, he was very happy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was excellent work. So what are you working on now? What's going on since Mary Poppins Returns? And
well, you know, in between that, I did so much work. I did work for Netflix.
Klaus, right?
Klaus, I did Klaus, yes, exactly.
Yeah. And you worked on the lead character for that, right? The the postman.
Yeah, the postman, yeah.
Yeah, really wonderfully animated. And I love the technique.
Yeah,
that was Spa Animation Studios.
Sergio Pablos, yeah.
Yeah, that's over in Spain?
Spain, yeah.
Wow. I mean, the work on that, I mean, I was surprised they did it. I was surprised that Netflix gave money to do it, you know?
Yes.
But it's a wonderful-looking film, and it's, I think it's still on Netflix, right? You can watch
it.
It's
still there, yeah. You can still watch it.
I'm going to take another look at it. I loved it when I first saw it. I loved it when I saw the, I guess they put out some sort of a preview for it. It was.
Yeah, I animated on the preview.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah, and I really loved it. And I was like, wow, I hope they make this, you know? And then.
They did.
So what's your favorite animation that you've worked on?
It's very hard to pick one because there's so many great things I enjoy doing. But I really loved my time at Disney on the Emperor's New Groove.
Right.
Yeah, because they gave me, all the, as a lead, all these small characters, like the old man.
Yeah.
The theme song guy, the waitress, and this guy with a funny hat that when Cusco is choosing the brides.
Right.
And the guy was very nervous, you know. Yeah. So each one of them did a different is a different personality. You have a deadpan waitress doesn't very move very quietly, and she's very sarcastic.
Right.
Then you have the old man who's trembling all the time, you know. And then you have the sequence where Cusco is choosing the brides.
Right.
The guy's very nervous because any mistake can be killed. So he's very nervous. So he's like, oh, please don't kill me. You know, he's very frantic, you know.
Yeah.
And then you have the theme song guy who's a showman, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So each one was different. So, and the director let me free to do the way I wanted.
It's so liberating. When yes. you work on something where basically you can just let yourself go and just get into it and do a great job,
yeah.
and somebody's not second guessing it, saying, that finger should be like this or whatever.
Right, right, yeah.
Or, I know that feeling. And it's wonderful. I've worked on some projects over the years that basically, you know, they kind of just let me go and do my thing. And,
yeah.
And those are always the most fun. You have the most fun with those things. So,
yeah, I had a few of those. Like for Klaus was pretty much like that.
Yeah.
Also for Intergalactic, I don't know if you saw the movie, but it's on Netflix. It's CG, but there's a graffiti on the wall character that the guy drew on the wall. It's like a character that he came up with. The character on the movie.
Right.
He's like a comic book artist in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He came up with this design. It's all hand-drawn. I did the hand-drawn part.
Right.
There was also the same way. They let me do the way I wanted. It was very, not much directing, you know, like,
right.
Oh, change here, change that, you know.
Right, but you're able to do what you wanted to do. And
yeah, because sometimes you have a production that you do a scene and the director, they ask you to change so many times. And
yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's like, okay, it's not even getting better.
No,
it's just changed for change, you know.
You know, you're making the changes, but the thing is like any enthusiasm that you had for it, you might have it the second time, but when you get to the fifth or sixth pass
you're tired.
You're just like, you don't even want to look at it anymore. You just want to kind of just get it to where they approve it. And that's not a good place to be. It's not a good place to be. As an animator, it's not a good place to be as a director too, because then, you know, they're getting something that they want that, you know, okay, yeah, this works, but you've really taken all the life out of it at that point. So I know how that is. What would you like to see in the future for animation? Would you like to go back to the, you know, just staying with the hand-drawn or?
Yes, I want to stay with the hand. Well, I always stay with the hand-drawn. I did a class at Disney CG because they were training everybody. And I wanted to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't difficult to do CG. I remember going to the class. And the very first day, I did the character walking.
Mm-hmm.
And the second day, I did the character doing a little acting. I mean, it didn't feel difficult at all.
Right.
I just didn't enjoy the process.
Right.
Because I like to draw. And when you animate with a mouse, with a digital puppet, with a mouse, it's not the same feeling for me. Yeah, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Not that I hate, because I like CG movies when it's well done.
Yes.
Like the Incredibles by Pixar, I think it's great.
Oh, it's wonderful, yeah.
Wonderful, and I love it. The acting, they do amazing acting in CG. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't like myself, the process of animating digitally. The CG.
Right.
I like to draw, so for me, I decide, okay, everybody's going to CG, all my friends, everybody. I want to stay and see what happens because I love hand drawn. And it's been going well since I don't regret. And it worked out for me, you know,
right.
Because I do design too. And then when I don't have animation, I have design work, right, and vice versa.
Sure.
Well, so no, I have to draw. For me, the drawing is the fun part. So I have to stay with the drawing, you know.
When I started these podcasts, it's called Classic Cartoon Animation. And the whole point of this is to celebrate hand-drawn animation. Right. And I've had people on that say, you know, I've had Bert Klein on, and he said, well, I like them both, you know, the two, but they, I don't associate hand-drawn with computer animation. It's like a, its own thing, you know,
right,
which it is. It is.
Yes.
And, you know, my background, I wanted to be a puppeteer when I was a kid, but I also drew. So I also love cartoons. So, you know, around 12 or 13, when I was thinking I was going to work for Jim Henson, you know, because he was based in New York, I flipped the switch because I'd already done some competitions here in puppetry. And so I, all of a sudden I decided, I think I saw, it might have been, I want to say it wasn't The Rescuers. I'd seen some, it was Disney. I think I saw Jungle Book again. It was, I had seen it when it originally came out, and then I saw it maybe 6 or 7 years later. And I was maybe 12, and I was like, I saw it again, and kind of just, that's what I want to do. And I knew that as a kid, that's what I wanted to do, but I had to see it again to really, and that's when I told my dad, I said, yeah, I don't think I want to do the puppetry anymore. I think I want to do this. And he was very upset at me because he thought I was talented. Right. Yeah. So, so that's how I switched gears into, drawing. And,
I'm glad you did. You
know, yeah, me like, too. So
it's fun. It's really fun. You know, I want to, like when you asked, I want to see more hand drawn animation.
Yeah.
Feature films. But I would like to see something as beautiful as what they did, what the old Disney used to do.
Yeah.
I'm not saying going back to that. I'm just, you can do fresh stuff. Something doesn't have to be a copy of what they did. I'm just saying something beautiful. You
know? Something beautiful inspired by that. And,
yes.
And, you know, we were talking about Ichabod and Mr. Toad before, which is one of my favorite Disney films. And that time period with the Mary Blair design, Claude Coates working on the backgrounds, and you had some really fun character animation coming out of that, which basically...
Yeah, that sequence with the chase is like insanely well... Not only animation, but the direction.
The direction of it is unbelievable.
Incredible. Whoever directed that is like genius, you know.
Yeah.
The time of every scene is perfect. The cuts, and it's incredible.
I know Wooly Ritheman worked on some of that. Ward Kimball.
Animated, yes.
Yeah, Ward Kimball. And you could see Frank Thomas's work in there. And
yeah, that's, you know, where he's like on the horse, really scared. And it's incredible. It's
like,
but every single scene, it's amazing. Like the timing of every shot. And the cuts from one scene, one shot to another, is like just perfect.
It's
like
perfect.
Incredible. You know?
If you have Disney Plus, check it out. So I'm just letting our audience know.
Yeah.
but yeah, no, check it out on Disney Plus. If you've never seen it, it's two stories. It's the Mr. Toad section and then the Ichabod Crane, the Legend of Sleepy Hollow. And I think it's wonderful. It's not that long either. It's 70 minutes or something. It's not tremendously long. Sandro, thank you for coming on here. And I keep seeing your work on Facebook, and the stuff is just dazzling. It's really wonderful. I know a lot of people are going to be looking forward to this interview. And like I said, I think you're a brilliant animator, and just keep pushing the 2D animation, you know.
Thank you. Thanks so much. I'll try. That's my goal, is to keep.
Yes, mine too.
I have ideas. Let's see what happens.
Well, good. Keep the ideas coming. Anyway, thank you for doing this. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay.
Do you have any questions or comments about the podcast? Please email Brian at cartoonerific.com. Your email may be featured in one of our future shows.
Well, I have to say, Sandro Clouseau is a massive talent in the animation world. He's carrying the torch of Disney's Nine Old Men with his masterful animation. And I'm not saying he's copying. He's not copying. He is doing his own thing. But a lot of inspiration from all that wonderful stuff from Walt Serra of animation, and then taking it into the modern day. So he is a wonderful, wonderful animator. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what he conjures up in the future in his magical animation bag of wonders. You know, a little something that I've been enjoying on Facebook lately, because I don't go on it all the time, but when I do go on there, people are posting little clips of all these bits and pieces of classical cartoon animation. And it can range anywhere from, you know, commercials to TV shows to clips from movies or short cartoons. So seeing and all the stuff that's being posted is pretty good. It's all interesting things to look at. So I'm really kind of enjoying that. So, you know, I hope you are too. Anyway, next week on the Cartoonerific podcast, our special guest is going to be animation story guy and sometimes voice guy and director, Mr. Sam Levine. I've known Sam for quite a few years now, and I knew him when he was just a youngster. he was actually probably in his 20s when I met him, and then he went on to go to work for Disney and other studios, and he's done wonderful things. So he will be on next week. So there. Anyway, if you really like what you're listening to, please subscribe, or why not tell a friend? That's always a good thing. Anyway, this is Brian Mitchell. I want you to have a great day. I want you to have a great week. And thanks again for tuning in to the Cartoonerific podcast. See you soon.
This has been a Cartoonerific Studios presentation.
The Cartoonerific podcast is copyright 2024 by Cartoonerific Studios Incorporated. All rights reserved.